Hello and welcome to Home to Her, the podcast that's dedicated to reclaiming the lost and stolen wisdom of the sacred feminine. I'm your host, Liz Kelly, and on each episode, we explore her stories and myths, her spiritual principles, and most importantly, what this wisdom has to offer us right now. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, and welcome to today's show. Today, we're going to be talking about the moon and her connection to the sacred feminine. And honestly, there is so much to say on this subject. We all know that we organize our lives around the sun, which defines the parameters of a day. And we all know that we also track time based on the Earth's rotation around the sun. One full rotation is a calendar year, right? Well, yes. But it hasn't always been just this way. People once organized themselves around the rhythms of the moon. They also measured time with her. The Greek word for moon is mene, and inspired by the moon, the Latin word for month is mensis, while mensural meant measurement. Our ancestors also personified the moon, first as the expression of a great mother, and later as a triple goddess with the primary phases of the moon, the waxing moon, where it's going from small to getting larger, the full and the waning moon, where it's shrinking down, as the virgin goddess, the mother, and the crone, or the wise woman. Which is one reason why in art and sculpture spanning thousands of years in so many cultures, you see images of various goddesses depicted in conjunction with the moon. The moon is associated with so much magic, mystery, water, and I just love this quote from the late author Craig S. Barnes, who stated so beautifully in one of my favorite books, In Search of the Lost Feminine. He said, "Scholars write that when the moon returned, women danced and sang on the hilltops and gave thanks. And some even say this was the beginning of dance and the lute and the drums." Well, maybe all this moon magic feels like ancient history to you. My guest today is here to tell us all that it doesn't have to be that way. April McMurtry is the founder of The Moon Is My Calendar and the New Moon Calendar Journal, a simple and groundbreaking tool for aligning with inner and outer cycles, tracking daily health and wellness, and bringing your intentions to life. As April states, the moon is a beautiful beacon in the sky, reminding us that everything is a phase. April is a visual artist, a mother, a yoga teacher, and a creative lunar guide. She also has a background in youth leadership, girls' education, intuitive arts, and meditation. April is a mom of two daughters, and today she's joining us from her home in the San Francisco Bay Area. April, hello and welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, Liz. What a beautiful intro.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you here, and I'm so excited to talk about this. This is honestly one of my favorite it's one of my favorite things to talk about, but even more importantly, I think it's been a reflection source for me. It's an intuitive, you know, a thing that I want to go in and think about. So I'm just excited to bring that outward into a discussion with you. So, one place that I really like to start with people before we dive too deeply into the specifics of the moon, but I love to just get a little sense of people's spiritual background, how they're growing up. And I think that really helps me and listeners get a sense of how you got to where you are. So I'm curious, you know, whatever you feel comfortable sharing, just what that background might have been like for you as a child.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been reflecting on the Irish Catholic part of my family lineage and going to church with my granny, and we called it torch, like as in torture.
Oh gosh.
I know. Well, just to sit there and see, you know, like to have to be in a space of just listening to the droning on and not having things like resonate and who are they talking about and what are they talking about and why don't I get the wafers and the grape juice? Because my sister and I were the only ones that weren't baptized within all of my that side of my family.
Ah.
So it was like a part, you know, something that was there, but not then the decision, you know, within my, for my parents was to not baptize us, that we would get to choose. And
So you're sort of there and, but not 100% in.
Yeah. Just as an outsider, I think it was when my granny would take care of us that we'd go, if we'd spend the weekend there, then we'd go with her on Sunday morning. And just sit in these hardwood pews, and, you know, but some of my most really expansive experiences have been in churches. You know, as a teen, I got to travel and volunteer throughout Latin America, and some of the places that I visited just had such a special energy and such a grounding within the silence and within the walls and whatever was spoken within the walls of those spaces. So, yeah, that's sort of this one dimension. And later, my granny left the Catholic Church, and I started to take her to Unitarian congregation that's here. And I really enjoyed that. And even just the ritual of the standing up and the singing and then the sitting down and the exploring spiritual topics through many different lenses. So that is there. And then mixed in, you know, with a path that my mother took in her own spiritual journey and quest, and as a part of the Sufism reoriented within the West, a teacher, the Avatar Meher Baba, who brought this practice and teachings of Sufism reoriented to a more Western way of life and bringing that spirituality in. So this kind of a bridge of East and West. So that was also present within the house, but it was personal to my mom. And so there wasn't ever like, that wasn't my path, but I got to learn maybe by osmosis, much more like of an Eastern spirituality, mysticism. That's just in the upbringing. And I attended the elementary school that I attended. Many of the teachers were a part of the Sufi community. So along with that kind of a Montessori Waldorf, more mystical and exploration of many paths, you know, that's a part of the teachings. And like the nature-based, that the spirit is within nature, within the trees and within all of that. So that was very influential, you know, to my growing up, to really believe that the fairies lived in the flowers. Like that was real. And it still feels very real.
Oh, I love it. Well, and it sounds like too, that would have paved the way for you to experience the moon as more than a rock in the sky. Mm-hmm. Yes. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. I was actually just talking with a friend who was kind of put it into words of, oh, this connection with the moon is a spiritual practice. And it is, it's been the window and then the sort of the doorway, the opening, the passageway into connecting with all cycles within nature, within our life in this human form. So it was helpful to hear that reflected back and really honored in that way of, yeah, a younger self wouldn't have necessarily known that was the route that I would have taken and to have, you know, a grounded spiritual practice that was guided by the moon.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea of moon as spiritual practice. And so when do you think the moon really started calling to you in that particular way?
There's sort of many points that all, in some way, they all create a constellation that doesn't feel like there was a one beginning. I do reflect back and think of a particular lunar eclipse that was very, again, opened this kind of this, the a veil being lifted and something that needed healing just almost simultaneously in the moment of being in and witnessing this lunar eclipse. Really something that came through as a very clear transmission that I began to unpack over the years that followed. And that was, I think that was 20, that might've been 2010, in that particular eclipse time. And it's just continues to layer on, from there. And after the birth of my first daughter. So definitely motherhood was, brought in this, a need for a rhythm and a need really to be held by, to be held within the space that I was holding for my experience as a mother, for my daughter to then, it was like, who's holding me through all of this? Where's the container where I can fall apart as needed and come back together? And through that, a dear friend and my colleague, Sita Rosalie Davis, we started meeting on the new moon. And so that's been more than 10 years and really established a very rhythmic way of connecting her and I, and connecting in that the dark of the moon, that that time of endings and beginnings. And so that's where the practice came to life and came into really out of that need for being able to be held and fall apart and come back together and be witnessed and witness each other and have that. The moon has a very mirror-like quality as well.
Mm-hmm.
To be seen, and to see what is revealed and exposed, and to really reflect on that, and integrate that, so that each lunar cycle there can be a practice of bringing in whatever seeds of wisdom have come through life's experience, and doing that in a rhythmic way. And I love how you share just the intro of how, you know, we're very used to the sun being this guiding force. And that is one of the cycles, right? The day-night cycle. And yet in a solar year, there's kind of that new year's time of, okay, reflect on your whole year and then try to set yourself straight and make goals or resolutions. And it's so much pressure to do that once a year. It's so much pressure.
So true.
And like, really. So I, when, you know, with Sita and I, that the practice of regularly doing that on the new moon was like this very refreshing and forgiving, of, okay, well then here we go into the next cycle. A span of time that felt more manageable, really, than trying to get it right going a whole year and like, whoops, okay. You know, so there is a like a almost compassionate and non-judgmental and forgiving, encouraging feeling that comes through for doing this work, the self-study and the really being conscious and having that companionship and that guidance from the moon.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're making me think of too, is in that same book that I quoted at the beginning, it's called In Search of the Lost Sacred. I don't know. Now I've forgotten it because I don't have it in front of me. In Search of the Lost Feminine. He talks about how people probably once lived their lives in more circular rhythms as opposed to linear rhythms. And I guess if you think about it, the beginning and end of a day, it's very linear, right? There's a beginning and an end. The sun comes up, sun goes down, that's it. And we tend to think of it as a straight line. And linear thinking lends itself much more to the concept of judgment as opposed to circular thinking. They're really, judgment doesn't have much function in a way, in a circular worldview. Like, there's nothing to judge. You're just going around and around and around again. There is no point in evaluating, really, you know? So I hadn't really thought about that, but when you were talking about compassion, you know, and like a gentler way to approach yourself, that feels like it would go hand in hand with that circular way of viewing time.
Yeah. And in the way that evaluation comes in as a form of reflection, and a form of what doesn't serve and what am I going to leave behind as I enter into a new cycle, rather than that like linear point A to point B, a way that like nothing else moves that way in the universe.
Right.
Everything's spiraling. Like that is so much why this really cultivating a relationship with the moon allows for that deep understanding and that deep knowing and wisdom of, wow, everything is a cycle. And as you read in the beginning too, everything is a phase and a phase within that cycle. And we can really look at which phases are valued within a society, or what's given value, and then what is not,
mm-hmm.
And how we all suffer as a result when only what's valued is the full moon, being productive, mm-hmm. being youthful, and only having sort of a one kind of expression. I feel like that's opening up a lot more for more possibilities. And that can come hand in hand with really connecting with and honoring all the phases that the moon goes through. Because again, it's this reflection in a mirror. So how am I honoring all the phases that I go through, like the bad days and the, you know, the when there's a feeling of like, well, I'm not on top of my game and maybe things are starting to kind of fall apart a little bit. There's a pressure to like hold it all together or give the appearance of that. And that's not very helpful.
No, totally. I'm wondering if you experience, you know, in the intro, I talked about this connection with the sacred feminine, which is obviously this whole show is about, you know, connecting with the sacred feminine, but I don't want to assume anything. Like for me, the moon is because of that connection with so many goddesses, but just in general, I experience it. If I had to label it more masculine or feminine energy, it feels more feminine to me. But I wonder, does that resonate for you? Do you experience it in the same way? Do you think it's a her or...
Yeah, and I will often use the pronoun her, and it's, thank you for bringing this up, because it's not just a given. And I think even within certain cultures, it was seen as more masculine, like the seeding energy, the seeding of life. And there's also the experience of having it be, or having the moon contain within the energy, the presence, the archetype, all of that, the multitudes. And so whether that is, you know, sometimes I'll refer as like, what phase are they in as a pronoun? And for me, and this is part of why this is, the moon is an intimate, personal, having a relationship is very, unique and special to each of us. And so there is that, who is the moon for you, that ability. And that's really in the way that I share, and I like to sort of help to open these doors and windows for people who are interested in cultivating this relationship, to be able to really say, and there's no mediator, there's no one other expert that gets to say, oh, the moon is feminine energy and you have to feel it in that way. It could also feel very protective, and being protective isn't necessarily masculine or feminine. There's different ways to feel protection. And yeah, so having that permission, for me, often it is as you mentioned too, with the triple goddess, like this, both connecting in a whole cycle, like connecting with the youthful part of myself. I never have resonated with the word maiden. Like, I don't know. There's something about maiden, the word itself. I'm like, no. But the youthfulness, that springtime energy within the cycle, yes. And then that wise energy, that kind of been through a lot, been through a whole cycle, coming to a close, that also that's contained within the whole cycle. So in terms of like the divine, yeah, the divine feminine, it sort of has been parallel in how do I experience the feminine for myself? And really acknowledging as a young person and in my youth, I didn't want to identify with the feminine. Like pretty much saw like, oh, I see how it is. Being feminine is being weak. So I'm not going to be. And I hear so many people talk about having this experience. And so I adopted a lot more of a masculine way of being, physically strong, spending a lot of time with guys like skateboarding or doing things that I look back now and see like, wow, I was really trying to prove something. Right? Yeah. Whether it was something to prove to myself or gain some kind of approval. But to do that, I had to compromise this more lunar, intuitive, and more yin way of experiencing my own experience. So it came back later, and it definitely came back through connecting with the moon to be able to access those qualities within myself that I had pushed aside, sort of, I guess, in service of forging my own way by what I thought society and what I thought, like, at the loss of more of honoring feminine qualities. So yeah, that has been a big part of the journey too, of reclaiming parts of myself as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And when you started, so the moon, I guess, sort of shows up to you. Well, that's not the right way, but it's gradually, subtly becoming more important in your life, perhaps. How was it kind of a conscious shift to sort of tracking your time and your rhythms in a lunar cycle? And what was that shift like for you?
It came really on the tail end of burnout. So it came out of this necessity and need. I would have gone on, like, to the point that I was making, I grew up as a swimmer and an athlete in that way on a team called Sun Valley. And I coached the team in my teens, and I got to be the mascot one year and dress up. And that mascot was Solar Man. So when I reflect back to that, I'm like, okay, so at one point in my life, I was actually Solar Man.
And I got that is so perfect. I just, where you are now.
Somebody out there might have a photo of that. And so I had to explore that whole realm, right? And I would have continued in a much more solar way of being had it not been for the burnout, I think, which came with having a daughter and then another, you know, having two children, working a whole, like, multiple jobs, and kind of buying into that work more, work harder, like work yourself down to the bone kind of mentality. And so my health was suffering. My hair was falling out. I was having weird, like, nervous nerve twitches, different parts of my body. It was like something really wrong. And so I, in starting to understand my own nervous system, of balancing of that sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, is really balancing also the solar and the lunar qualities within the self. And in yogic anatomy, we have a solar channel and a lunar channel. and ways of then honoring that lunar and what's more yin, and really honoring rest and sometimes, you know, and finding a way of, I didn't really know how to do that. And I felt like if I was resting, I wasn't like earning my keep or some story. Like there's definitely lots of stories there. So that's around the time we had a big move, lots of big shifts and changes. And then my husband and I were, he helped me to design the calendar, and Sita was like the midwife and the doula of like helping to birth it and supporting that whole process, to then create this tool that I kind of thought was just, we were creating like for me and Sita and people that we knew. And so we just had a small run the first time around, but it became really clear that more people were interested in this. And so really after the first printing, the next fall, I was like, oh, are we going to do another edition? Like, are we doing this again? And it's really, it's grown exponentially from there. I think in a response to that desire of so many other people who want to connect with the rhythm in nature, but really the cycle of the moon that helps to guide that more rhythmic way of being.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I do want to talk about the new moon calendar journal too. It's such a wonderful tool. And as always, you know, the kind of the one limitation with podcasts is it's not a visual medium, right? Although I can put links in the show notes so you can go and check out what the calendar looks like after this. But I wonder if you could walk us through a little bit what some of those components are, because it's really very different than any calendaring or, you know, system that I've worked with before.
Mm-hmm. There, each lunar cycle, there's 6 pages, and beginning with a space for a new moon mandala. And that page just sort of has a ghost image of the moon as the circle. So really the idea is to really to plant any seeds within that circle that you want to grow. And I remember just meeting early on, someone who was a part of the circle and a part of this work too. And she would write a word and then kind of, you know, make colors and kind of decorate around the word. And she said, well, I'm not an artist or I'm not creative. But she found her own way. And really that, the practice of creating mandalas, it's a practice of where am I focusing my energy and attention? And how does that energy get infused and imbued into a mandala? And it's really less about a final product or how something looks, and a lot more about how does it feel and how does it hold the energy and the frequency of that intention? Because I find often it can be helpful to have something that is holding that frequency for us. If we're feeling doubt or we're feeling lost or we're not, you know, we're feeling like, oh, this dream or this intention is never going to come true or never happen, to have something that we have created, that really, it is a way of holding that space and that energy. So that's, that mandala place is there. And the paper in the calendar, I'm really a paper person. I love calendars. I own, like, I get so many calendars every year, but it's really important to me that the paper is like a nice thick paper that you can really draw on if you want to, or paint on, or like glue on, and hold up to that. So paper. So that's the mandala. And then the next page is a page for seeds of intention. And it's, you know, it's very intentionally left spacious without a lot of prompting or out a lot of, like, there's no inspirational quotes or there's no like, oh, the moon is in this sign and here's, you know, what to do. It allows for that bringing in really whatever practice you may already have to bring that into this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that.
This structure. So maybe in that way, it's like hands, a little hands off. And so some people are like, where do I start or what do I do? And it's like, well, what do you want to do? What do you care about? What do you want to see shift in your life? And so that the next page is a circular calendar which really the whole journal is sort of built around. And there is something, and Sita and I have talked about this a lot, how the movement of the eyes, right? When our eyes are moving and we're just looking at a month, which the lunar cycle is 29.5 days, looking at that month and our eyes move in the circle, we're already training ourselves. The way our eyes move, right, connects with parts of our brain. Mm. We rewire things, as we know from different therapies with eye movements. So we're rewiring just by working within this circular context.
I hadn't thought of that. That is really cool. Yeah.
I'm looking for, okay, where's the article? Where's the research so we can start, you know, like speaking the language of with scientific backing of why this works and why it matters and what's possible. I just know it does. And I hear from, and mostly women, how that just the circular nature of it has shifted something within them that they might not even have words for. So, and this space there, you know, there's space to either color in or make symbols or words, and tracking, you know, there's within the calendar itself, it has suggestions of symbols and possible things to track. I have really found some of the basics of just seeing how many hours of sleep, really getting down to the basics of really being like really honest with myself, where I can't wiggle out of like, all right, if I start to go into that pattern of burnout of working and getting a second wind in the evening, I know where that can go, so I can more easily course correct. You know, it doesn't mean like I love the late night hours. Like I love the stillness and the quiet, and I feel like I do a lot of my creative work then. But my life doesn't support that. That's not a way. So I've had to learn to honor the night. So hours of sleep, and in any other practices, and it just gives this snapshot. Also for people who bleed and have a menstrual cycle, it's also interesting to just see around which moon phase you're bleeding. And I know that there's a lot of like, as if there's this ideal, it's ideal to bleed on the new moon because of the energy being parallel in that way of like, the release and the death and the letting go.
Yeah, and it's probably worth mentioning here for listeners that don't know, there is a theory. I don't know how solid it is, right? Because we're talking about our ancestral people, but that once, prior to artificial light, the introduction of so much artificial light, women naturally cycled with the moon. I mean, because the average, and we all know that women are not average, right? Like we're not all the same, but the average length of a menstrual cycle matches up more or less to the cycle of one full moon. So you would bleed on the dark moon, and then, you know, you would ovulate at the full moon, which makes sense because it's bright out and, you know, like people are having a good time under the light and whatnot. So, continue. I just wanted to add that in to, you know, in case people didn't know that.
Yeah. So when I hear someone say like, oh, I'm cycling with the moon, I'm like, we all are. We all are actually cycling with the moon. So what your unique cycle is in that rhythm, that to me can make it seem like, oh, if I'm not bleeding on the new moon, then I'm doing something wrong and there's something I need to fix about myself. And we all know that that is the predominant message for girls and women. It's there is something wrong with you and you need to fix that. And here are like all of the industries built around that. So what I have found, and this comes through cycle after cycle, is just being open to that curiosity of what is my natural rhythm and my natural cycle? What are some of the factors that that may affect that or shift that? But what I've seen is last year, and this was very clear because now the moon almost becomes like the reference point of, oh yeah, back that new moon in Scorpio when there was a storm and the branch fell on our house, or like whatever the like reference point actually, no, the last new moon in Scorpio, there was a fire up the road and we had to evacuate. I mean, very memorable, and very memorable that it was the new moon, and memorable because I started bleeding that day. So all these things coinciding and having that reference point. Now, six cycles later, last month or so, the full moon is in Scorpio. And thankfully, there was no natural disasters happening at that time, this time around. But I started bleeding. That was my first day. And so what I see is that every six cycles, my cycle flip-flops from new moon to full moon. Mm. So that's, I wouldn't otherwise know that if I weren't paying attention and having a curiosity and allowing my cycle to be what it is, and to do the best I can to take care of myself, but to see that it shifts over time. So I've, you know, I know some people that like clockwork, just bleed, you know, have a regular predictable bleeding at a certain time. And yeah, there's another, Dr. Jonas, I think in the like 1950s, he had read something and done some research. I think he was interested in a bit of astrology and who's a medical doctor. You can look it up online. Because it's a particular method for conception and fertility, was to see that women, their sort of natural ovulation cycle was on the phase of the moon that they were born under.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's another place to look, because he got many people to sort of donate, I guess, submit their birth information and then conception times if they had had children, to do some of this compiling, some of their research. And so, and I actually had heard this from a yoga and Ayurveda teacher as well, and that started to get me more fascinated, like, what moon was I born under? Why didn't no one tell me this? Why hadn't I heard this before? So anyone who's listening, I encourage you to look at a moon calendar for the year that you were born, and then see what phase the moon was in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And to look that up, you really need to know your pretty much your exact birth time, don't you, to figure that out?
Yeah. The phase is, you can have a little wiggle room with the phase, because really when the moon is talked about, there's like the four main phases, and then often the cycle's broken down into eight. And so each of those phases is sort of said to last like 3 or 3.5 days to
okay.
be born on a crescent or a first quarter or full. You know, it does help if you want to get to the super specific, but for a while, the way that I remembered was that the year I was born, the 21st of December, Christmas, was a full moon. I was like, okay, here's my reference point, full moon Christmas. I was born 6 days later on New Year's Eve. So I just know, okay, approximately after full moon, my what's called the natal phase return, the phase of the moon from the day of birth, would be about 6 days later. So I put a little star on my new calendar and journal and just mark that and say, you know, to honor myself in the intimate way that's not like a solar birthday or a solar return, which is more sort of an outward expression often when we think of birthdays, but something very private that's like, well, maybe only I know about this. What am I going to do for myself in a lunar way? And then to mark and see, you know, ovulation is it's an expression of a creative urge, something that wants to create and birth something into the world. And that's our creativity. Not always, you know, not necessarily for having children. So what is that creative urge in me want to create each cycle? And how might there be a sweet spot or a time? And maybe it is that natal, the phase return. And maybe it's something else, but I won't know unless I have a practice of that self-study in relationship to cycles.
Oh, I love this whole conversation. I didn't know much about the moon phases either until I had an astrologer do a chart for me, and she was talking about it. And once she did, it made a lot more sense to me about my own personal rhythms, not necessarily with ovulation, which tends to move around a little bit. And I so appreciate you saying, by the way, that, you know, there's nothing that we have to fix. I mean, even the rhythm of your cycles will change after having children. Gets a little more erratic as we get older. Like it can be all over the place. But what I've noticed for myself with the moon phases, I was born on a balsamic moon. So that, you know, which the balsamic moon is the very last sliver before it slides into the new moon. So I like mystery. I like darkness. You know, I like all of that, you know, kind of feeling like I've got one foot in what's in the now and one foot in what's coming forward. And I've actually noticed where a lot of people, I think there's some traditional wisdom about being tired around the new moon and needing to go inward. It's actually a very creative place for me. And I sometimes have really potent dreams around that time too, which, you know, I guess you could say it's the new moon, but I also often wonder if it's that birth connection too.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It's fun to check this out and look it up. And I'll make sure to put in the show notes, April. I'll ask you after this, just a recommendation maybe of if you haven't done your just real quick and easy free astrology chart where somebody could go and do that so they could figure this out.
Yeah. There's a great site that just has looking up your moon phase and sign if you want that. They also have a calculator to show you when that return happens each month. So it gives you those dates that then you could just circle or mark in. They do it for conception. And so it even says like whether or not the gender is going to be boy or girl. And I'm like, well, that's even limiting within itself. Like, and why would that be that way? But clearly so much of this work in connecting with the moon and really all of the cosmos, that symbolic language that comes through has come through by observation, by listening, by seeing the rhythms and patterns play out over time and making meaning of that. So we do get to each make our own meaning. I think I only got as far as that circular page in the calendar as I was describing the different pages within
Yes, you did. You did. And you know what? I want to go back to one more thing and I want you to finish, right? Because we're sort of meandering, but in case I forget, I wanted to just reference the symbolic nature and the visual nature that's really present in the moon mandala and also in that circular calendar too. You know, it's a circular calendar, so you have this option to put symbols on that represent certain things to you. And April's given you some great suggestions in the calendar if you want to use those symbols or you can make your own. But another thing that I just really love about that is that when you start to read about the divine feminine, and especially the really ancient divine feminine, people that were deeply connected with the idea of her, it was a lot of pre-written language. And so the theory goes is that people were more visual. And even in conceiving of the feminine energy, it's an image is a more holistic way to experience something as opposed to written language, which is reductive, right? You have to break something down to its individual parts and pieces and even down to individual letters in order to get your thoughts across. And it's also linear because of that, right? A sentence has a beginning and it has an end. But an image, it's all together. It's holistic. It contains the whole. So I really love that about the calendar too, that is woven into it.
Thank you. So much of that, what you were just speaking to, is also talked about in the book, The Alphabet Versus the Goddess.
Yes. Oh, I love that book.
Yes. And I just, as you were speaking, it made me think, you know, how writing is linear in that way it goes, and comparing to societies and cultures where writing goes left to right or right to left. It's something else to think, because there are those hemispheres of our brain. There's the solar and the lunar channels and how we relate to right and left, and left being more lunar. And just honoring all of the, you know, the lunar calendars that are still in use today. The Islamic calendar, the Hijri, is a lunar-based calendar. That first sighting of the crescent moon starts the month. And the Jewish calendar, also the Rosh Chodesh sighting of that first crescent. And it's a solely lunar because it balances out with the solar year. So that presence is there, and the Gregorian calendar that we've been sort of inherited, bringing a more questioning eye of, that's not the ultimate truth. That's not the ultimate way of experiencing time. It's one way to mark time and have this like very exacting preciseness. And lunar time, it requires a little more tolerance of flexibility and fluidity. And, you know, between one phase to the next, each cycle, it may be, 5, 6 days, 7, 8 days. You can't necessarily box it in to a week, 1 week. So that's just another, it's not a byproduct necessarily. It's just tuning in and connecting with lunar time allows for opening another part that's maybe hasn't been, a part of our traditional education system here in the West or in the United States. But it will be, because those tides are shifting and we need this. So, our connection with time and how time is marked is very sacred and has been sacred for peoples from the beginning of time. And it's not like we're necessarily returning to that. I feel like there's a reconciliation and a making sense of that and a moving forward with what is meaningful and what brings meaning. And our connection with time can bring meaning rather than being like confined to a work week and a certain, you know, that confinement of time when it's in a box. It feels like, it feels very confining when it's a circle. There is an expansiveness and a fluidity that is very, it's a different experience. So I'll just say the next two pages are for daily observation in the calendar. So there's a little more space for writing or taking little notes. And it does give you a sense that between each phase, there's a different amount of moons. And so you start to see this within regularity, within a rhythm, that there are, that there's room for, some room for a different amount of days between each phase. And then the final page is the reflect and release, which again could be in the form of mandala or could be form of writing, kind of like I'd use it as like a lessons learned or like notes to self, big themes, anything that really wants to be let go of and released, to be able to write that down.
Did you find that when you were making this shift to tracking time and your rhythms on this lunar way, that there was an adjustment period for you, or did it feel like something that happened very naturally?
Yeah, there was definitely an adjustment. And I remember having the experience of just within my mind, like trying to read things about the moon and then just not making sense, like in my mind and intellectually, like I couldn't make sense. I could read something about how long the cycle was or why there was different number of days between phases, and something just wasn't getting through. And it made me realize, like, I'm not going to do this. It's not going to work to do this through my mind, through that faculty, that there's another way that I'm going to have to approach this. And my mind just would sort of do like somersaults and twists and turns. And so what I ended up doing was, the first cycle that I tracked, I made a point every day to visit and view and see the moon and where she was or where they were in the cycle, to begin to really embody, so that now there's just this inner knowing of where the moon is any day or night at any point within the cycle. It brings a lot of meaning and that spiritual sustenance and nurturing to have that relationship. And in a society that values productivity, it might be seen as not having value. Like, why? Or even for someone who feels like, I'm already so busy, or why would I have time to like think about where the moon is? And I'm really encouraging. And probably if you're listening, you may already have a practice or be really drawn to that. And so that what you're asking, that period of adjustment, it's almost like it's happening simultaneously. So how to live in these two worlds of being a part of really this rhythmic and circular lunar cyclical time, and then also kind of abiding by these like Monday through Friday, you know, days of the week, which are names of the planets anyway. It's already written. It's written into that calendar what the ancient roots are. It's just been, forgotten.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really your point about going outside and seeing where the moon is. I feel like that's, you didn't necessarily frame it as advice, but I receive that as really good advice too, because something that I've noticed with myself is, you know, there is the tracking of time, and I've got other spiritual practices, right, that you've, it's on a lunar cycle. There's a way that you can still do that very mentally though, right? You can spend all your time like looking down, like reading stuff or writing it down or whatever. And we can really miss the visual aspect and just the interacting with our natural world, which I think is the real invitation that, or at least one of the real invitations that flowing with the moon offers.
And finding, so to build on that, if this is going to be advice and invitation, finding where is that path in the sky? So what is the path? The sun and the moon travel the same path, rising in the east and setting in the west. So wherever you live, where are those landmarks of what that happens? Are there mountains and hills? Is there water, the ocean, or certain buildings or whatever it might be? And relating to that path that relates us to the directions. And yeah, I've had a pretty regular practice of having certain times of the cycle of going out and going on a moon walk. Often the day before the full moon is really lovely when the moon rises, still during light hours. And then viewing that first crescent. You know, I wonder sometimes, I'm like, wow, used to be like a profession and a job was to call out the first sighting of the moon for the calendar, is that calling out. So I like to do that and go with my daughters or with a friend. At this point, we're recording social distance, walking up to a ridge, but finding that place, that lookout, where that viewing can happen in your environment.
Yeah, I just read about these professional moon criers very recently, and I was so fascinated by that. And I guess if you think about it too, in our pre-science times or whatever, that there, you know, I wonder if there was that fear that, you know, that you want the moon to return. It tells you, it confirms to you this cyclical nature of life, that everything begins and ends and begins again. So I think there must have been tremendous reassurance when that crescent was spotted in the sky.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And how we connect with that in our daily life and in honoring the seasons as well, of what trees appear to be dead, just sticks and branches, and that springtime, that renewal of seeing leaves and seeing things come back to life, and having that appreciation, and the moon mirrors and is a parallel to that same cycle that exists within the seasons. Yeah.
Mm. So you mentioned, I just love this idea of the moonwalk, nothing to do with Michael Jackson, right? But an actual moonwalk or Neil Armstrong, I suppose. But I wonder if you could tell us how, because one thing that's still a little confusing to me, and then you did write, I know you write about it in the journal, where we find the moon. It's so much easier to me to find the sun because it's a constant, more or less. I mean, it comes up at a different time, you know, slowly throughout the season, but the moon, it's trickier, right? It doesn't always rise at the same time and set at the same time.
Exactly. And this was when you asked about the making an adjustment. This was part of the adjustment, is how does this work exactly? Like, what are the inner mechanics of how this works, and how am I going to make sense of it? So I'll show you, and I'll walk all of the listeners through. The starting point, if we say that the new moon is the starting point, there's a reset. So the moon and the sun are rising together. And so at sunrise, the moon is also rising, but we cannot see the moon. And this is why is the dark of the moon, is because the moon is so backlit. The moon is just consumed in the light. So it's almost like a reconnecting with source and emerging with that source of life and light of the sun. And so there's this closeness, this reunion. And that's really where some of this, the spiritual nature and practice of this is like, wow, at the new moon, the moon is just right there with the sun, with all the identity sort of obliterated, no form. And we can't, from our perspective on Earth, we cannot with our eyes see the moon. So that can hold within us that deeper knowing of things that we can't necessarily see with our eyes, but feel the presence. So that is that reset and that starting point of the cycle. So the moon and sun rise together and set together. Now the moon is going to move more. It's going to sort of lag behind. So each day after that, the moon rises about an hour later. And I just, you know, just like the sun has a different rising time, it can vary. But I just think in my mind an hour, because that I can wrap my mind around that. So if the sun rises and then the moon rises an hour later, there creates this distance or this angle. And so at that point, they travel together mostly through the day, but when the sun sets, that's when the first crescent is visible because of that lag, an hour. And it's usually the second day after new moon, because then it's 2 hours after sunset that the moon will be just visible, about to set.
Okay.
At the start of the cycle, we only get about an hour or two of visibility of the crescent moon. So if you're not there and on it to witness, you can completely miss the moon. And so then by the time it's the first quarter, so the days go by, the first quarter then, the sun is rising, and then the moon rises at noon. So when the sun is overhead, and that's what creates the right angle. And so the sun in astrological terms is square. So the sun and the moon create this angle. So the sun is overhead, and the first quarter moon then rises at noon. The sun sets, and then the moon is overhead at sunset at the first quarter, and then sets. And so that continues. So later and later, so this distance is growing between the sun and the moon over the cycle, to the point where we get to the full moon. And that distance is so great that as the sun is setting, the moon is rising. So they're opposed. And that is when we get this show, right? Spotlight on the moon, of that the light is fading, and then here's this glowing, gorgeous orb coming up in the sky. And that it makes sense why the full moon would receive so much of the attention, is because there's a more obvious alignment and configuration of that that distance and that angle between the sun and the moon. Is that's when we think of the moon sort of being the queen of the night or the heavens or traveling through the night sky. And yet throughout the whole cycle, we can see that is on the exact sort of the polarity of the new moon. The new moon travels the entire day and is not even present at night. It's not like she's in shadow or somehow like mysteriously invisible. She's traveling in the daytime. So when you look in the night, there's no light there. And then we have on the other end of that wholeness that's created throughout this balance that happens over a longer period of time. It's called an infradian rhythm for anybody interested. The lunar cycle is an infradian rhythm and the menstrual cycle is an infradian rhythm. It's longer than a day. The full moon then travels the night, that balancing out over this whole infradian rhythm, and then rises later and later and later. So that by the time is the last quarter, the moon is rising at midnight. So often I would find myself early on staying up until midnight to watch the moon rise. And I was like, this is not sustainable. So I just have to go to sleep. And so that means then, if you've had the experience of seeing the moon in the early morning after the full moon, like later and later on, is because the moon is rising so at midnight and then overhead at sunrise and then setting. So that the balsamic moon that you said is your natal moon phase, that can only be visible right before sunrise.
Which is my favorite time of day. Of course it is.
So I've woken up at 4 a.m. just to go and watch that phase of the moon rise because it's so special. And it's that ending. And so practicing the saying goodbye, anything that I want to say goodbye to, or just that practicing of what often doesn't have space for a grieving process and honoring loss, I'll just take that sort of from my heart to that balsamic moon to lighten my heart into practice saying goodbye. And once the sun rises, the moon in that way, she doesn't hold her own, that form. She's too close to the sun. So in those last final days of the cycle, it's just right before the sun comes up. And then once the sun is up, it's like sort of disappears into the light.
Wow. Oh, I love it. Well, as you were talking to, I was remembering, I've got this little patio off of my bedroom that I use for a meditation space because you probably know, with two kids, and it's just so hard to get quiet, you know, and I'm lucky that I can go outside a lot of the year and sit quietly. But some of my favorite times too are when I'm out there, especially more in the winter and the spring before the sun is so bright, you know, like it is in summer, but seeing the moon, the full moon setting behind the hills as the sun is coming up. It's just so magical.
It is. It never gets old.
No.
It connects us to that. I mean, it can really connect us to that childlike wonder, that awe, the mystery and the magic of our existence, and that this cycle is there as this constant companion and has always been there. And so when we really listen and have our observation turn towards nature and towards natural cycles, then that rhythm can become a part of us. And rather than adding something on or something else to do, it's like then that becomes this guiding principle that other structures can, you know, my dream and vision really is that the structures within our life are informed by this cyclical awareness.
Hmm. Yes. And I want to ask you too about the subtle nature of the moon. And I don't know if you would use that word, but when I think of solar energy, there's really nothing subtle about it, right? It is in your face, but the moon is much more subtle. I guess even the full moon, my previous guest is talking about moon salutations in yoga, and she was saying that even at its brightest, the full moon is still only at about, I think she said 14% of the light of the sun. So it's a much more subtle energy. And I wonder if you have any reflections or advice, you know, suggestions perhaps on kind of tuning into the subtlety of it, or even understanding, you know, that it's not going to be the same as orienting yourself to solar energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in that way, there can be a softness, right? It's a filter. There's a filter and there's a receiving, a receptivity, but like a receiving that can come, that comes through the moon. You know, the light filtering. And so a softness, so we're able to, you know, even standing in the moonlight and looking at the moon because of the harshness of the sun, we can't do that. It's so powerful, so strong and almost overpowering, that we, you know, in seeking shade or shelter from the rays of the sun. And yet, you know, many cultures too, is like part of that, the practice of even just bathing in the moonlight, of how, you know, how much, inviting in that subtlety of what that, again, when we talked about earlier, it's not like the language may not exist. If there was language, it's more poetic and intuitive and less of a linear way to be able to talk about something that can be felt. I find myself, for the last 5 or 6 years have been sending out moon letters. It's shifted around, but now it's like before the new moon. And I'll just sit and listen and type really what it is that I hear when I tune into the moon, of this kind of a channeling of whatever the messages are there. And so that subtlety comes from being able to be in a space of being receptive, of listening, and being open without trying to control something, to allow for messages to come through of what it is that you may need to hear. The wisdom of the moon, I mean, the moon is a direct teacher. So there is really no one mediating or in between you and that relationship you may have with the moon. It may help to have it be activated. So that whatever comes through, often I'll write and I'll share things on Instagram that come out. And I've gone back to read some of the things that I've written in moon letters. I was like, wow, I really don't remember writing that. Like, that came from beyond me. I tried to think that up on my own with my mind. That would not be what, you know, that was the moon speaking, or however I'm tuning in or connecting in with that frequency and that energy. So that's been my experience, is the subtlety comes through a stillness and a listening.
So beautiful. Oh my gosh, there's so much more I want to ask you. Actually, while I have you on air, maybe you can come back and we can do a little bit more, because I want to talk about lunar eclipses, and I want to talk about your moon sign and what all of these magical things mean. But maybe just as kind of a final wrap-up question for this session, maybe you've already answered this, but, you know, for listener who's like, well, this sounds magical and fun, but how might I even begin starting to think about my time or think about myself in relationship to the moon? What would you recommend?
I think, and this goes along with the question of subtlety, is noticing there's this question of, okay, where's the moon right now? And so we walked ourselves through that whole lunar cycle of where the moon may appear and the changes that she goes through in the phases, and asking the question of, where am I right now? And so this is a beginning place for this inquiry of, is my energy flowing outward? Does it feel like there is a desire to connect in a more outward way? Or is my energy flowing inward? What is your own tide of your energy? And that's part of this honoring, because often we're taught to override that. Often our lives are set up in a way where we don't have space or room to honor that. So we have to continue with the out, giving, go. And it's really until we can honor both of that high tide and the low tide. And making note for yourself of just those simple questions of, where is the moon right now? Seeing like, what phase, are we before the full moon, after the full moon, before the new moon? Like, asking that question, seeing if you can kind of locate the moon either in the sky, or knowing that she's already set or not yet set, and then asking, having that inquiry for yourself, and that starting to build that relationship. and seeing. So it's not a formula. Like every full moon, I'm going to have outward energy and having something predictable. Although once we start to see and understand our own rhythm around that, then we can see, like, I have this energy now, and so I know I'm going to work with that. And when that tide has come, sort of that ebbing is there, to honor that time and trust and know that the next, whatever the high tide, the energy will flow and come again, but not thinking like, it's gone, I'm dried up, I have to just keep keep productive, keep going, in kind of like a panic mode, but saying like, oh, this is my ebbing. What can I do to clear off something off my plate? Again, it may happen during the waning time, which is more of parallel with what the moon is doing, but it may happen at other times. And until we ask that question and tune in subtly enough to our own energy, then we won't quite know if we're coming or going, and we'll just go in an old pattern or an old mode that we've been taught some at some point. So
Yeah, so rich, you know, so rich with just the inner knowing, you know, that following the lunar cycles can offer you, and then understanding the moon herself. It just feels like a relationship that can really blossom in lots of ways, kind of spiral outward. I love it. And I just want to go sit under the night sky now really badly. April, thank you so much for your time. This was so much fun, and I would love to have you back, and maybe we can do a round two part where we dive into some other aspects of moon magic, I'll call it.
Yeah, I would love to, Liz. This is really, it's a pleasure. It feels like a whole journey, you know, a whole journey within itself, and really to bring both the awareness, but how down to earth, how much it connects us with an experience on the earth of honoring cycles, and where the openings are to shift into new ways of being that are in relationship. My desire and my hope is really that those tides really begin to shift in a way that we can honor cycles. It's something that the relationship that connects us with something eternal, something the infinity of cycle after cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love it. May it be so. Oh, well, thank you so much for being here. And if you would like to learn more about April and her work and the New Moon Journal, sure. Website is themoonismycalendar.com, correct?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. And I'll make sure I put that in the show notes too. And I'll make sure I've got the Instagram handle for April in there too, so you can find her. And thank you so much, April.
Thank you, Liz.
Yeah. And thank you guys for listening. And as always, if you enjoyed the show, you are welcome to subscribe to it. You can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can tell all your friends about it, and you can do all three of those things if you just really think it's the best thing you've ever heard. So thanks for joining us, and I'll talk to you again soon. Home to Her is hosted by me, Liz Kelly. You can visit me online at hometoher.com, where you can find show notes and other episodes. You can read articles about the sacred feminine, and you'll also find a link to join the Home to Her Facebook group for lots more discussion and exploration of her. You can also follow me on Instagram at hometoher to keep up to date with the latest episodes. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here soon.